supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The website posting Philadelphia polling results experienced major issues last night during the low turnout primary election. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that increased security measures were apparently to blame.
The website went from showing 50% of the vote to 10 and was inconsistent on the tally all night. City Commissioner Al Schmidt says the vendor who provides the service to the city chalked it up to international events.
The vendor explained that a couple of days ago there had been some sort of worldwide viral threat, and that in response to that threat, our vendor locked down or ratcheted up, whatever word you choose, the security of our website to prevent it from being infected or breached in any way.
Schmidt says the security measures caused the website to switch between a primary and secondary server, which accounted for the different vote tallies depending on when you refreshed your browser.
In the presidential general, which you just saw, we didn't encounter any of these problems. With this, we had to, our vendors felt it was important to tighten up the security of the website. So even though we were getting fewer hits of our results, the website itself was less elastic in being able to respond to those.
The issue on the website did not affect tabulation of votes, which Schmidt says is done on a completely different system.
That website is just an external portal where we're showing the results that have come in. The actual calculation of the electronic results is entirely separate from that.
There's also a canvassing or review that's done as a matter of course after every election. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Democratic voters in Philadelphia turned out in greater numbers than anticipated yesterday, sending three-term incumbent city controller Alan Butkovitz into retirement, instead nominating first-time candidate Rebecca Reinhart. They also gave a big primary win for district attorney to Larry Krasner, a civil rights attorney who promised to change the direction of the DA's office. Returns showed a big turnout in parts of the city where younger voters favor more progressive candidates, and that's perhaps a reflection of a new level of political engagement following the election of Donald Trump. The trend is evident in other parts of Pennsylvania as well, where largely grassroots groups have formed filled with newcomers to political activism. WHYY's Katie Meyer reports that they're now on a mission to turn that initial burst of raw energy into something more lasting.
All right, everybody, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
On a rainy Saturday afternoon, a group of about 50 activists are gathered in a conference room in Harrisburg. There are people from across the state here, and all belong to some sort of political organization. Some are well-established, like Planned Parenthood or unions like AFSCME, which owns the conference center where the meeting is being held. But many others are new. They popped up almost spontaneously after Donald Trump was elected president. As a whole, they form a new coalition called Pennsylvania Together. This is its first meeting, and it marks the first time many of them are meeting each other in person.
For me, as for many people, the day of the election was absolutely devastating. I remember waking up after not much sleep and having to tell my two daughters what had happened.
Hannah Burton Lorison is one of Pennsylvania Together's primary organizers. By trade, she works in public policy. But like others in the room, she says she wasn't overtly political until recently. After the election, Burton Lorison started organizing in Philadelphia for Tuesdays with Toomey, a group that holds weekly rallies urging GOP U.S. Senator Pat Toomey to break the Republican Party lines he usually votes along. Tuesdays with Toomey grew quickly in connection with Indivisible, a national nonprofit that helps resistance groups organize. But Burton Lorison says it started becoming apparent such efforts could be better used elsewhere.
So I really began asking the question of what would it look like if we worked as a state to demand the same accountability of our state legislators that we're demanding of Donald Trump and our national representatives.
And so the seeds of Pennsylvania Together were planted.
This is the moment for us to ask what we want our democracy to look like.
That is the main question of the day. How can dozens of disparate groups from different corners of the state with varying backgrounds and experience levels organize effectively? The agenda for this first conference is pretty straightforward. The attendees break off into teams for open-ended discussions about what they're seeing on the ground in different towns and cities. What efforts are already underway? Where are the gaps? Are incumbents going unchallenged? Are elected positions going unfilled? But the day's most important discussion is on an even trickier, more entrenched issue: racial justice.
We can't overcome white supremacy alone. People of color are not going to be able to do that. So we have to be able to reach out to white folks and sort of energize them and engage them in the work and give them the foundational tools to do the work.
Jude Denis, executive director of organizing group Power Northeast. She says not only is race the most important thing, it's also by far the hardest because there's a disconnect.
Well, I think the reality, there was no reason for white people to wake up. Revolutions don't start because the status quo feels good. Revolutions start because people feel like this is not the world that I thought I lived in. And so for people of color, of course, it's been obvious since the beginning because we've always had to struggle.
Looking around the conference room at the dozens of organizers, it's hard not to notice a trend. While the group is both male and female, young and old, with some racial diversity, it's still mostly white, and that's especially the case among its organizers. Alyssa Packer, a scientist and college professor by trade who's one of the chief Harrisburg organizers, readily acknowledges the problem.
We're not going to take over the work that you've already been doing for a long time. Like, we want to use all of these new group members and put them to work on the issues that you've been working on. We don't want to reinvent the wheel on any of this.
Racial barriers, of course, aren't the only things that bring different perspectives to the table. Most of the organizers here are from Pennsylvania's big cities, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. But few are from the truly rural areas where Donald Trump is overwhelmingly popular. Angela Aldis, a young mother who works as a nurse, is one of the only ones. She's from the southwestern reaches of the state, Westmoreland County. While some of the new advocacy groups from the bigger cities have hundreds or thousands of members, Aldis says her group, Voice of Westmoreland, or VOW, is lucky to get 10 at a protest.
All of us who slowly started to meet each other, we all kind of assumed we were the only ones.
Pennsylvania's rural areas are still politically powerful and fiercely conservative. That's why Aldis made the trek out to Harrisburg, to figure out what more she can be doing. But she notes what works in Philly or Harrisburg won't fly in her hometown.
We're not going to talk about guns. You know, we're not going to win any argument there. And so we're just trying to find the things that if we're going to have a conversation with, you know, most of my neighbors, we do agree on certain things. Like, wind and energy jobs would be good for our community. If we could have that, we would take them.
The activists repeatedly note they don't underestimate the challenges. Organizing requires a lot of time and effort of people who, for the most part, have other full-time jobs. And it's not easy to get such a diverse group to fit under one umbrella. Nevertheless, as evening rolls around and the group wraps for the day, spirits are high. Everyone's communicating, and several present, most with no previous political experience, have committed to running for their local school boards and city councils. But some participants do note all that positivity sometimes feels like it borders on naive.
How do you think it went today? Obviously, there's a lot of people here who are very new to this kind of thing. Like, does it seem like they're on the right path?
Yeah, they're on the right path. I'm going to say yes. I'll be nice.
Dolores Ritzman's a longtime attorney who attended on behalf of the National Lawyers Guild, a progressive bar association. She's a black woman who, she explains, has been doing this stuff for years. As she sees it, the challenge will just be keeping up the momentum.
I think that it needs to go deeper. I think that it's a good start, but they really need to do more of these.
The groundswell of activism after Trump took office has been frequently compared with the conservative backlash that followed Barack Obama's election in 2008. In that case, it turned into real institutional might. Conservatives swept the midterms 2 years later, thanks to the rise of the Tea Party. In the days and weeks to come, the groups plan to track bills as they move through the legislature, get their own names onto ballots for local office, and learn all they can, as fast as they can. For all of their varying priorities, one single mission is clear from the Pennsylvania Together crowd. Whether they've always been political or got involved on November 9th, they intend to have a hand in their own political future. Katie Meyer, in Harrisburg.
There are more than 1,000 long-term missing persons in New Jersey. Their cases can go unsolved for years, even decades, and it's often their family members who bear the emotional burden of the disappearance. This Saturday, the New Jersey State Police is holding its first-ever event for family members of the long-term missing. WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports.
Jill Neville's 3-year-old brother Billy went missing in 1962. The feeling of loss still lingers 55 years later.
It's the not knowing. It's the hardest thing.
Neville was 2 years old when she says Billy was abducted, and even though she acknowledges the odds of finding him alive are slim, she still holds out hope.
It's like this brick wall. We're standing on it. I'm in front of it, and he's behind it. But I don't know what brick to take out to find him.
The event on Saturday is for Neville and people like her, whose missing family members have not yet been located by police. Detective Sergeant Joel Trella hopes it will be something of an informal support group.
We're trying to bridge that divide with the families and say, we understand that you're suffering through this. We understand that you have a hole that you're trying to fill and a void that you can't fill until your loved one is recovered.
Among some of the free services at the event will be grief counselors, FBI specialists, and comfort dogs. There will also be representatives from the national nonprofit Team Hope, which supports families of missing children. But police are also hoping it might lead to new breaks in old cases. They're asking biological relatives of the missing to submit DNA samples, which can be matched against a national database of unidentified remains. Lieutenant Louis Andronopoulos says finding out your loved one is dead is better than knowing nothing at all.
We're not looking for to solve a crime. We're looking to give closure to a family. And at times we do find them deceased, but at the end of the day, these families have closure.
The event takes place at 1 p.m. at Rutgers University in New Brunswick. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Registered New Jersey voters participating in the primary election less than 3 weeks from today will determine the Democratic and Republican candidates vying to replace Governor Chris Christie. NewsWorks Tonight kicks off a series of conversations with the candidates. Joining me now is Republican 16th District State Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli. Mr. Cittarelli, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Great to be with you, Dave. Thanks for the opportunity.
And congratulations on endorsements from the Star Ledger and NJ.com. Now, glass half full, it seems that even at this juncture, more than half of New Jersey Republican voters have yet to make up their mind. What will you be doing to help seal the deal?
I just have to continue to sell what it is that I have to offer. I'm an MBA CPA. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a two-time successful business owner. And I think given the fiscal and economic crisis that we're up against today, what people are looking for is a hands-on, roll-up-your-sleeves chief executive officer. That's what I have to offer.
Exploring your candidate website, in the homepage, you note New Jersey is dead last in economic growth, drowning in debt, crippled by rising property taxes, unable to fund core priorities like infrastructure and pensions. How do you hope to affect change? Let's start talking about your five-point plan. First off, school funding reform.
This is what drives the property tax crisis in New Jersey, and the property tax crisis is the number one issue. And any gubernatorial candidate that's talking about fixing property taxes without first talking about the school funding that we have here in New Jersey is either oblivious or being disingenuous. So we have 600 school districts, Dave, throughout New Jersey. 200 are overfunded. These towns should have their aid reduced as they have revitalized and their own ability to pay has increased. And we have towns like Jersey City and Hoboken that have experienced extraordinary revitalization. Jersey City gets $160 million more than it should. Hoboken gets $9 million more than it should. We need to reduce that and give it to all those other districts that are underfunded and are experiencing a property tax crisis.
I'm intrigued by one number you just mentioned, 600 districts and 500 plus municipalities. Is consolidation part of the answer?
Without a doubt, the school funding formula is the primary reason why we have a property tax crisis. In small part, we also have a property tax crisis because of, as you said, 565 towns and 600 plus school districts. That's a whole lot of inefficiency. And certainly as governor, I will advocate for regionalized models and consolidation. But at the end of the day, if I've learned anything, Dave, the locals have to be the ones to make that decision. You can't force it on them.
Though a whole separate category in your five-point plan refers to tax reforms on a statewide basis.
We desperately need to reform our tax code. It's what has made us number one in the nation in worst business climate. And what this package does is lowers the overall tax burden for all businesses and individuals. I think it will create prosperity and economic opportunity for all.
Let's next touch on the employee benefits reform package you propose.
We've got a pension that's insolvent here in New Jersey for our public workers. It's the worst pension situation, second only to Illinois. I think we need further reforms. We need all those public employees with less than 10 years in the system to go into a cash balance plan. We need all new hires to go into a 401k. And we need all current and future retirees from government whose pension plus Social Security is more than $50,000 a year. They need to start contributing toward their own post-retirement health care benefit, because right now, their out-of-pocket expense is zero. That is not sustainable considering how expensive the post-retirement health care benefit and people living into their 80s and 90s. And those three little reforms, Dave, you wouldn't believe how much flexibility that provides me to pour billions into the pension and point it towards solvency.
Mr. Citarelli, you've been in office since December 2011. What are some of the major accomplishments in your body, and what are some of the challenges that lie ahead?
Well, Dave, I went to the legislature 5+ years ago to take care of school funding reform, property tax reform, tax code reform, and downsize a bloated and antiquated state government. And the fact of the matter is, I've not been able to achieve those goals as a freshman or sophomore in an ever-decreasing minority. The only way to achieve the seismic change that I'd like to see achieved is from the governor's seat.
The last of your five-point plan touches on bipartisan communication. What are your causes for optimism in that regard?
Well, listen, I've always been able to get along with the other side of the aisle. I look forward to working with the legislature. But bipartisan communication also extends to our New Jersey congressional delegation. Right now, I think that relationship is dysfunctional. As governor, I'll sit down with both U.S. senators and all 12 congressmen and women to make sure we're advocating for the state of New Jersey. We need to do a better job of that.
Mr. Citarelli, best of luck to you and your campaign moving forward. Thanks for your time on NewsWorks Tonight.
Dave, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. Enjoyed it much.
16th District State Assemblyman Jack Citarelli. In the weeks leading up to the June 6th primary, we'll be speaking with other candidates for New Jersey governor. Tomorrow, we'll hear from a Democrat in the other chamber, State Senator Ray Lesniak. Now let's turn to Life Unauthorized, a week-long series from WHYY.
He told me I was supposed to come back to Mexico.
I feel sad, angry, and not cheerful.
Back at home, I would be in danger.
I agree with what Donald Trump has been doing about getting all the criminals out.
I'm just trying to stay on the right path.
In the United States, more than 5 million American-born children have at least one unauthorized parent at risk of deportation. In other cases, family members leave their children behind rather than take them on an arduous journey to the United States. For WHYY's week-long series, Life Unauthorized, Dana DiFilippo has this story of a grandmother from Guatemala who knows well how immigration can separate families.
For 36 years, Guatemala was in the deadly grip of civil war. It ended in 1996, but left lingering widespread poverty. Maria lived in Zacapa and couldn't make ends meet. She decided in 1994 to move to Philadelphia, where her brother lived, to find work. She had a husband and four children. The youngest was just 7. She left them all behind. She paid a man $1,400 to smuggle her over the Mexican border in the back of a tractor trailer. She arrived in Philadelphia on a Saturday, and by Monday morning, she was picking flowers on a farm to send money back to Guatemala. Her husband and two teenage children snuck into the United States the same way soon after.
Pero las pequeñas fueron 12 años.
The two youngest ones didn't come right away because the danger was just too great, and I didn't want to put them through that at that early age.
In fact, the next time she saw her youngest children, they were adults. 12 years had passed before they joined Maria in Philadelphia. She had missed their graduations, as well as all the everyday ups and downs of childhood. That absence made their eventual reunion a bit rocky, although time has since softened the hurt. Maria had a 5th child since moving to the United States, and now has 4 grandchildren here. In the 22 years since she arrived, she has managed to get a Social Security card and a driver's license, although she won't say how. She had a factory job for 16 years and got health insurance through her job. While she doesn't speak English, she lives in a predominantly Spanish-speaking neighborhood, so that hasn't been a major problem. She's built a good life here.
I want to stay here. This is where I belong. I'm extremely worried. But in a way, I'm also a bit relieved because my son just turned 18, so I don't have to worry about him being taken from me, and he was born here. But also, I'm afraid for other mothers that have young children, the separation of a parent from their child. They don't understand how hard it is for us just to be separated.
La separación de familias es muy, muy difícil.
Even though her children are grown, Maria still lives in fear. At 58 years old, she now is raising her 11-year-old grandson, who lost both parents in a traumatic incident 5 years ago. Getting deported now could mean leaving another young child behind.
That was WHYY's Dana DeFilippo speaking with a woman from Guatemala for our series, Life Unauthorized. To hear more from immigrants living illegally in our region, visit newsworks.org/lifeunauthorized. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.